Now back to the Green Architects Lounge.
And we're back. Thanks for hanging in there with us. Also, like always, you can catch us on the Green Building Advisor as well. That's greenbuildingadvisor.com. Go to the Design Matters blog. Join in the conversation. Probably on this one, I'm expecting we'll have some real comments from people.
Yeah, it'd be great to get some feedback and some comments.
Yeah,
this is a polarizing issue.
It really is, I'm hoping we're going to get people who are all zealots on one side and zealots on the other, and we'll parse through it all, and it will stay there in perpetuity as a great research page.
Yeah,
because this is probably just me blathering on and you tolerating me and feeding me drinks and stuff. All right. So we're about to play five questions. Yeah. Here's what's happened. Phil and I work with two guys who actually do geothermal installations, and we count on their expertise all the time. And like the stuff we're telling you is really, architects, regurgitating what they have learned from professionals and experience and all that, which is basically for us these two guys. So what I did is I created this email with five questions, and they both answered it not knowing, well, they knew the other person was answering it, but they, I knew I'd get different answers from both of them, and I thought it would illustrate a great picture. And we're going to post these on, when this posts on the Green Building Advisor, we'll post these questions and their answers. But right now we're going to go through them real quickly for you people who are so eager and tuning in and want to hear them anyway. So my first question to the fellas, we've got two guys. One is Jim Godbout, G-O-D-B-O-U-T.
Yeah.
Godbout.
Yeah. People always love mispronouncing
Godbout.
The Godbout Plumbing and Heating in there in Saco, Maine.
Yeah,
Biddeford-ish.
Yeah, down there.
Down there.
And then we've got Jeff Gagnon, who I believe is out of Bridgeton.
In Bridgeton.
Yeah. Of Gagnon Heating and Plumbing. And I've known Jeff for a long time. But anyway,
okay, question one.
Yeah.
When is a house a good candidate for a ground source heat pump system?
Yeah.
What Jim says is a large home with very good insulating values.
Very brief and to the point.
Yeah. But he's saying, all right, if the house is too small.
Right.
The big system, go for something smaller. Go for an air-to-air Daikin or Mitsubishi or something like that.
Right, I think
when your loads are that small,
it'd be fair to say that if we were bringing down the loads and we were really getting aggressive, small, tight, high insulated value house, we would not even think of geothermal because that's a lot of infrastructure. Yeah. You're gonna
20,000 BTUs per square foot per year or less, perhaps.
Right, right, and so really, if you're doing a bigger house that's well insulated, this is pretty good for it.
Yeah,
Jeff says. He divided it up, clever fella, as in one was, his response was one for new construction, one for renovation or retrofit. And he says, under new construction, a home is most always a good candidate for a geothermal system, especially if the homeowner is financing the construction project. The increased mortgage payments are offset by the savings in fuel. Therefore, it's a cash flow positive situation from day one. He says, for retrofit applications, it is a great candidate when the equipment in the home needs to be upgraded anyway. Or if the homeowner is considering installing a cooling system in the house, or they simply would like to be rid of their dependence on foreign fuel oil. And to that, I would only add that, by the way, it's often referred to as a renewable energy. It's really not. It's electricity. You're using electricity to move heat. I'm not contradicting Jeff there, but because you will reduce the amount of oil or electricity energy that you consume.
But because the highest COP.
Exactly.
Think of it a different way. Okay, right. Question two. When is it not a good candidate?
Right.
Jim says older homes poor insulation, existing high temperature hydronic system, existing steam system, due to the amount of infrastructure work required.
Right.
Okay, so there's stuff there in place.
Exactly. And if you're going to have to fight what's there,
Don't bother.
Yeah. And interestingly enough, and Jeff alludes to this as well about the high temperature system, geothermal is happier at the lower temperatures running in a slab or something like that at like 110, maybe 120 or lower.
Great for that application.
Not so good for the 150 because geothermal, really the heat coming off of that is around there. So, having a tank that to store something that hot like that, and It's not. It's much less efficient. So let's see. What does Jeff say? Geothermal is not a good candidate under new construction when a lot size is too small, that setbacks cannot be maintained to septic tanks or leach field, or if the ledge is extremely far down. Sometimes this related to a lot of added expense. Basically, he's saying
tough site.
Tough site. Don't do geothermal.
Small site. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't do it. He also says geothermal is not a good candidate for retrofit application when there's not adequate space for duct work. He's obviously assuming that he'd do a wire-to-air system for a retrofit, which mm-hmm. is probably what you would be doing. And he said if there's not a low-temperature radiant heat distribution system, just like Jim, and if the basement is finished and there's not an attic, meaning having no good visible place or a place to hide the duct work and all that jazz, which is
very interesting.
And totally understandable.
Okay, question three. What's your preferred way of doing a ground source heat pump? Open loop with radiant slab distribution. What Jim says is a closed loop concentric high producing well with water to air using ECM technology, circulating pumps and fans for most homes, providing heating and air conditioning with radiant in baths and kitchens.
Right. So,
tell me what the ECM technology is.
Well, I actually don't know what it stands for, but I know what it is. It's basically a constant pressure system.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you've got a well, what you have is a pump for your house. So like let's say you turn on you're going to wash your hands. You turn on your lavatory and you're washing your hands. The pump just goes on a little bit, boop 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 boop, but now you take a shower and now it's going on even more, boop 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 boop. It's a variable speed pump is really mm-hmm. what it is. So your connection to the well has its own little DC inverter, and the pump coming off of that is sort of an on demand pump. So you don't always have this hit to the electricity with this pump going on and off. So it's a variable speed pump system for the whole house, and both these guys use that. And it's also another component. I should add another component we didn't talk about is on peak or off peak systems. Like one of the things that made that other house so cheap was we used a device that only ran. We had storage. When do you need heat most? You need it cold nights, and when you've got a passive solar house, usually your heat loss is not during the day. So that happens to coincide with off-peak demand. So when you're doing off-peak times, that's when you're running the geothermal heat system. All right, I'm losing Phil. Come on, hang in there, buddy. I'm geeking out. All right, I'm sorry. So what does Jeff say? Jeff says our preferred way of doing a ground source heat pump system is an open loop system using either a ducted or radiant heat distribution system. So there's the big difference in the two. Jim loves a closed loop. Oh, and I should also mention he mentions that concentric high producing well. There's not many people who do that. It was developed by who is it? The Turner guys, the Turner Group,
mm-hmm.
New Hampshire, whatever. Where it's basically a well within a well. One of those wells is sealed up that you use for the closed loop system. So it's kind of expensive, but darn right bulletproof, and very high in the COP heat. So he gets a COP of like 4 or 5.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff usually gets a COP around 4, mm-hmm. I think. Any closed loop system will get a COP of 5 day one because the earth is already warm or cold.
Right.
You haven't changed the temperature of that earth. Or, mm-hmm. Anyway, all right, moving on.
Okay.
So we can go on forever. Four.
Okay. If I called you up out of the blue and said I have a well-insulated 2,500 square foot, three-bedroom house, and I'm thinking of going with ground source heat pumps, how much is that going to cost me?
The $64,000 question.
Good one. And $64,000 is not too far
right.
out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Jim says 40 to 50 grand. And remember, they're different systems.
Right.
Jim says 40 to 50 grand with an operating cost around $900 annually for heating and air conditioning. And that's figuring in pumping costs.
So that's significant. That's a significant part of that equation.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, he's spending more up front doing, you know, $900. You know, for annual cost for heating and air conditioning
mm-hmm.
in Maine.
Right, so that's a bonus. You get air conditioning.
Exactly. Jeff says a 2,500 square foot home would cost approximately $20,000 to $25,000 for air and about $25,000 to $30,000 for radiant, as in, you know, getting radiant slabs, that sort of thing. This would be approximately 4 to 5 ton geothermal system. The well and pump system would cost approximately $10,000 to $12,000 in addition. So he's kind of separated that out, what's in the house and what's out of the house. And if you add to drill well anyway, If you had to drill a well anyway for domestic water, then you would already be spending $6,000 to $7,000 on the well, in which now you would combine the two. So he's basically saying,
saying between 30 to 40. Jeff is saying 30 to 40, and Jim is saying 40 to 50 for closed loop.
Right. So you got basically you're looking at open loop versus closed loop with these two people with these two prices, and I think Jim only does closed loop and would not do an open loop, and I think Jeff would do a closed loop but prefers the open loop. Mm-hmm. So interesting, and that's just it goes to show what you'd find across the country, different installers. Mm-hmm. Question five.
What is the thing that is most often overlooked? Or rather, what surprises the clients or designers? Okay, so Jim gets into this one. He says, design of geothermals is not taken very seriously by many installers. More than half of the listed installs in this state, in Maine, have problems with performance and operating costs due to poor choices. I know. We get the calls.
Right. I like that part.
Many design systems with electric resistance backup heaters. So this means when we most need heating, they're using the most expensive way to heat your home in Maine at 15 cents a kilowatt.
No kidding.
Yeah. Our company will only install closed loop systems that require no electric backup. Some of the largest systems we install use peaking condensing boilers, which also help with large hot water demands.
I think that'd be for a big house he's talking about.
Big house.
So, yeah.
Money should be spent, but he prefaced this by saying it's appropriate for a large house.
Right.
Money should be spent on building envelope in almost every case that is brought to me asking about retrofitting geothermal to their existing homes. There's no sense in heating the outdoors with ground loop systems, especially at 15 cents a kilowatt. There it goes.
Yeah.
Many parts of the country and in Canada pay 6 to 8 cents, which makes it much more attractive.
Lucky Canucks.
Very interesting.
So Jeff, I love Jeff's answer. It's very politic. He says, we try not to overlook anything. We use a job information sheet so that on each project we have adequate information before we begin doing a design. However, I would say the bleed or water discharge location may be the most common unknown. This is because we don't even know if we need bleed until the well is drilled, etc. And basically he's alluding to that mysterious variable of what's the yield going to be from your well, what do you have to take care of in terms of, you know, dumping things overboard or taking care of in another well. One other thing I'm going to add is, and Jim's last comment made me think of it, is hot water, domestic hot water. A lot of people, you can add a super deheater to your geothermal. It actually makes it run more efficiently because these things want to, if you're heating with it, it operates more efficiently when it's cold. So you can spin off that extra heat and heat your hot water with it. And that's basically what that does. I also want to mention that the refrigerants that we use. I almost got burned. I did get burned on one of my houses.
This is interesting.
Yeah, because you know about ozone depleting refrigerants.
Yeah.
We all do.
Yeah.
This day and age, aren't all refrigerants non-ozone depleting?
One would think.
And in fact, when I was filling out a little lead thing, I was asked, you know, I had a little check mark for ozone depleting refrigerants or whatever, and I click.
I guess so, right?
Sure, yeah. And I called up, I think I called Jeff. And I said, it's not ozone depleting. And he's like, no, I'm sure it's not. I'll call the manufacturer. Call the manufacturer. And he's like, no, I'm sure it's fine. Whatever. And then
really?
Yeah. And then the lead people, I was dealing with Four Solutions at the time, say, oh, no, it's Four Solutions. And they said, yeah, but we need to see that in writing. We need to see what they're using and, you know, whatever. And so I said, yeah. So I call the factory and say, tell me what they're using. Give me the data. I need it for the lead. And then like, oh, you know what? You know, we're using this R22. I don't think it was, but it was something like that, which is an ozone depleting refrigerant. I'm like, oh, well, so there's a testament to lead actually, you know, going through, providing the paperwork, you know, checking your work. Well, it turns out I didn't get that point and I didn't deserve that point, frankly, because here I am using this. But starting in 2010, all the R22 and ozone depleting things are being phased out. So probably starting next year, you're all set. But this is the year, folks, when you want to ask, hey, what kind of refrigerant is in this heat pump I'm using? What you're really probably looking for is R410A. That's probably the most prevalent of the non-ozone depleting refrigerants. Okay. I think we've covered the heck out of this thing. We could go on and on. And
but let's listen to some music instead.
Thank goodness, yeah.
There's a nice lead-in. Start this whenever you want, and let me tell you about this band.
Okay, great. Go, man.
All right, this is another Brooklyn band. I'm a fan of Brooklyn bands.
Yeah, you do like the Brooklyn
bands. I do. I like them. Yeah. It makes me feel hip.
I
strive for hip, and there's very little hip around here.
Yeah, I know. But you're doing well.
Yeah. So this band is called Here We Go Magic.
Yeah, nice.
Jesse hates the name. I love the name. I think it's cool.
Jesse would hate the name. Come on. That's exactly what I'd expect.
That's right.
Yeah. No, it's good. And I hadn't heard this until you brought it in and we were listening to it before the podcast. But I'm digging it so far.
Yeah, it is just this fun, swirling, it almost reminds me of the shoegazy stuff of the early 90s. But it's much cooler. It's much hipper than that. It's almost sort of like this... tribal light, fuzzed out vocals, but very happy, chimey stuff. I recommend it. Go and watch their video because that's how I got mesmerized in the first place. The song, the album is called Pigeons.
Pigeons.
Beautiful artwork, beautiful video. Okay. The band is called Here We Go Magic. The song is called Collectors.
Okay.
Chris, pleasure once again.
Once again, Phil, thanks for stopping by the studio and doing this wonderful podcast thingy with me.
So. Cheers.
Cheers, bud. I got a mind fascination.